listeners, and welcome to the David Crit Podcast. I'm your host, Britt Lawton, and in this episode, I chatted to Samson Mulageta. Samson is a writer, editor, filmmaker, and dancer in Johannesburg, South Africa. This is a special edition episode for Heritage Day 2020, as Samson's event company, Rooftop Salsa, will be launching once again at Arts on Main, tomorrow, the 24th of September 2020. The link to this event can be found in the show notes below, along with other links to features mentioned in this episode. This was a pleasantly surprising episode, as we spoke about a variety of topics, from Samson's journalistic career, mapping out the geography of his life as a global citizen, the influence of this on his cultural heritage as an Ethiopian-American based in Johannesburg, the origin of Rooftop Salsa, the importance of community, storytelling and creativity, filmmaking, imagery, and so much more. I really left this episode feeling super inspired, and I'm sure you will too. Remember to get involved in the conversation by sharing this episode and adding your thoughts to the comments below. Happy Heritage Day! Yeah, so welcome to the David Crit Podcast. It's great to have you here. And it's an absolute pleasure to meet you. And I think maybe we can just start with getting to know you a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Samson Mulageta, and I have been in South Africa for over a decade. I came from New York City. I came to South Africa as a foreign correspondent. I was covering Sub-Saharan Africa for a newspaper called New York Newsday. And my job was to travel through the continent and write stories, which I did. I've traveled to 45 of the 54 countries of Africa. And I think I saw the struggle that print media was going through. And so I took a buyout and decided to settle in South Africa. I still wanted to do journalism, but I wanted to start a business that that would support journalism, because journalism is expensive. And so I took a buyout from Newsday, and I opened a couple of restaurants in Johannesburg. One was Abyssinica on 7th Street, which was an Ethiopian restaurant, which reflects my birthplace. So I'm Ethiopian-American. I was born in Ethiopia, and then my family moved to New York, where I went to school and finished, became a journalist, and then came to South Africa as a correspondent. So at some point, I had two restaurants on 7th Street in Melville. One was called the Melville Grill, which was a variation of the local grill that's in Parktown North. And so I had a steakhouse, and then the first proper Ethiopian restaurant in South Africa. And then Melville went through a bit of a dip. It came back again, but when it did, all the nice restaurants, high-end restaurants, had to get out, sell, and I sold and got out. Restaurants like Soy and Pomegranate, people remember those. And my restaurant at the corner, which used to where the Whippet restaurant is now, just actually also closed the space in the Ethiopian restaurant across the street. So at that restaurant, I, by happenstance, happened to be at a house party where there were salsa dancers. So I asked the instructors to come and do that at my Melville Grill restaurant. And for a couple of years, that was the place to be on 7th Street for salsa. We would give lessons in the afternoon and then parties in the evening after 10 p.m. So for the first 3 months, I was just a host, but then somebody just dragged me to the dance floor, and I started learning, and it was unbelievable. I absolutely loved it, and it changed my mind. From then on, I became this fanatical salsa fan, and I just would listen to salsa music in my car, nothing else. And then even after I sold my restaurant, I continued organizing the occasional salsa party all over Johannesburg. And when Arts on Main opened, I was there for the first day, and I took a tour of the whole place, and I ended up at this rooftop bar which was a rooftop bar of the canteen restaurant at the time. And as I always do, I look around and said, oh, this would be great for a salsa party. And I went to the owner of the canteen and said, hey, Matt Townsend, would you like to have salsa here? And he said, oh, no, we're doing really well. We don't really need anything, but thanks anyway. A year later, I went back, you know, I went back to Art's Own Land, the Sunday market, and was a little bit sort of quiet, and it just, I was, as I walked through the courtyard where the olive trees are, I said, this place could really use salsa. I went to Matt again and I said, hey, would you like to bring salsa here? He said, no, Sundays are really good for us, but if you want to try Saturday, sure. So I organized a documentary screening about the birth of salsa at the Bioscope, which was on Fox Street, just up the road from Art's on Main. And so I invited a whole bunch of salsa fans to come and screen this documentary. And then we walked over to the rooftop bar. And on a Saturday, we had about 30 people dancing on the rooftop. It really looked nice. But still, without the support of, at that stage, of the market, it was just people who came there specifically for this party. So I went to Matt and I said, listen, I think this will work on a Sunday. You don't have to pay me, and let's just try it out. And then for the next 3 months, I did it just like that, with no compensation, no nothing. And then after 3 months, I went over to Matt and said, how do you think it's going? And he said, sure, I'll give you 10% of the bar. And that was like our arrangement for a long time. And it became salsa at the rooftop bar became sort of a cultural phenomenon in Johannesburg. People were fascinated by people watching people dance on the rooftop, and using my journalistic skills, I did a lot of social media outreach. There are literally thousands of photographs of people dancing, videos, and the Facebook page for Rooftop Salsa has about 21,000 followers, and also popular on Instagram. So Rooftop Salsa as a brand is really something people have heard of. After 5 years, I left that space. I was developing a building nearby in Mabuning in Jeppes Town at 28 O'Red Street. So I left the canteen space and then went to develop at 28 O'Red Street. It's a loft apartments, coffee shop at the bottom, a rooftop venue. But after three, you know, and then I started doing salsa at that rooftop as well as at Six Cocktail Bar in Melville. And again, it became a center of the dancing community in Johannesburg. The dancing community in Johannesburg, you know, is somewhere between 500 to 1,000 people who, somehow regularly go to dance parties. It's a nice number, but in a city of 4 million people, I think, it could be much bigger. Now we can talk about the present moment, and we are approaching Heritage Day 2020 at a very unusual time when COVID-19 had brought the world to its knees. But right now, under level 2, everybody's sort of poking their head up above to the foxhole to see what's going on. And we have chosen to restart salsa at the rooftop at Art's on Main, because it's in an outdoor space where people can breathe and take precautions, but they can also have fun and have a good time dancing in the under the sun. The weather is beautiful in September. On the 24th of September 2020, we will have a salsa party, rooftop salsa party, at the rooftop bar at Art's on Main. We will start at 2 p.m. and finish at 7 p.m. There will be food and drinks. There will be lessons, dance lessons for newbies, people who've never danced before and claim they have 2 left feet. Yeah, so that's That's been my story with Salsa, Joburg, Arts on Main, Mabuneng. I live literally within walking distance of Arts on Main. And it's just nice when I walk down the Park Street, every few meters I would be greeting someone. So I love that feeling of being in a community. And that goes all across Johannesburg also. It's just, I am a, you know, true Joburger, because a friend of mine used to say to me, he was also like me, Ethiopian American. So he said, do you realize that we are the first true Joburgers? Because during apartheid, people stayed in their in silos. You know, you were in the suburbs or in the townships or this area, like everybody. But this is the first time in the history of this great city where people from all over the world, all over South Africa. That's why people like love Johannesburg so deeply, because it's so cosmopolitan. People like us who have come from different places appreciate everything about it, especially the sun. And I mean, Salsa happens to be the Rainbow Nation exemplified, because it's still in this world we live in. Everybody is deeply segregated. One of the civil rights leaders in America said that Sunday at the church is, or at worship, is the most segregated hour in America. It's also the same in South Africa. I mean, there are a few exceptions. The Rivers Church in Sandton, for example, is a beautiful example of how everything is integrated. Most of the time, it's still very hard because of the geography and architecture of apartheid for people to come together. So Salsa has been this beautiful opportunity to bring people together. And all that matters is, do you know the basic steps? And if you do, you're off and running with someone who you've never otherwise crossed paths with.
But you can see that in the photographs as well. I mean, whenever you see the events and you just see how happy people are and the sun shining and there's the Joburg skyline in the background, it is gorgeous. So,
yeah.
But now you said you didn't actually have a background in salsa. It was something new to you as well. How's your salsa now?
Well, after, you know, I have my 10,000 hours of salsa. So, I mean, I can do it in my sleep. And people think of me as a very gregarious, extroverted person, but actually I read literally thousands of books, and that led me to being able to go to America and actually reinvent myself as an American, not only as an American, but as an American journalist. I had a job as a foreign correspondent, which only about 200 people at that time, even fewer, had in the whole of America. So though that is the beauty of America, despite the current political climate, where an immigrant can go to America. And so I was quite excited. Every step of the way, I couldn't believe that, you know, when I was became the editor-in-chief of my student newspaper at college, in college, that was like, gave me an idea, oh my God, I could be a journalist in America, although I grew up in Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa, speaking Amharic, although I went to a really good Catholic school run by the LaSalle brothers. And so I grew up, you know, when I was a little kid, reading Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, and all those things, you know, just read anything I could get my hands on, which was a perfect preparation for going to America and becoming a journalist. So I was able to cover the Iraq War. I have been to Israel writing about, say, Ethiopian Jews. So journalism is my true calling when it comes to profession and career. So I've been to 45 countries in Africa, 62 countries overall around the world. And then I just sort of, after being a bit traumatized by the stories I covered in Liberia, I covered the civil war in Liberia, where there was a lot of, I saw a lot of things that still disturbed me. Same thing happened in the DRC and then in Mogadishu, Somalia. So salsa has been sort of therapy for me, and where I witnessed the beauty and friendship and warmth of humanity after being a war correspondent, where I saw so much pain and death and few times under fire in Somalia and in the DRC, in the city of Bunia. There was a documentary made about my experience in Bunia because I was the only local or international journalist when these two ethnic groups, the Hema and the Lendu, were coming after each other. And I was reporting that in the Security Council, actually, the UN Security Council had to send these French paratroopers to come and rescue everybody. So that was probably the proudest moment of my journalistic career, because it felt like it made a difference to report the story. So after literally covering these life and death stories over a decade, then I switched my gears, and through salsa started bringing a little bit of joy and friendship to people in the city of Joburg. It feels really great that I feel like literally thousands of people have come through to my parties, and all kinds of friendships have developed.
That's beautiful. So working with journalism where you were involved in such like difficult situations, mm-hmm. and then trying to put those into words, which was obviously your job, which is very difficult as is, because mm-hmm. I mean, how do you encapsulate those experiences and those feelings into words? And then of course going into salsa, there's no words, it's movement and body and feeling, mm-hmm. and a form of expression, but both of those use creative scope and communication and stuff. So I'd love to get your kind of input on those.
Well, the question about salsa, what I feel about my emotions and feelings when I'm dancing salsa, it's a form of meditation. It really, you're relaxed, you're focused on the steps and your partner. It requires human intelligence, emotional intelligence, because you're working with another human being in a beautifully choreographed movements. I sometimes say that I've had in dancing in salsa an amazing confluence of music, the sun, or the moment, the partner, the movement. It's just such a satisfying feeling. I call it like I can die now moments. Beautiful experience. Yeah. So the other question about journalism and writing is that I think in order to be a writer, you need to be a reader first. You know, so literally absorbing countless, you know, spending countless hours before internet days, before smartphones, just reading anything I could get my hands on. So I just read anything, Reader's Digest, National Geographic. Mm-hmm. And so, and then as you grow up in your teenhood and all that, you're just like a font of information and random knowledge, which is perfect for a journalist. And then, of course, you are able to craft words, and you also study the craft of storytelling. You know, it's like, if you spend time to try to understand, you know, and traditionally in journalism, there is this, you know, structure or the inverted pyramid where you tell a story, your most important item first, and then second important, third important. And then, because people often in breaking news situation, they just want to know the most important thing before they arrive at the office. You know, they're on the bus, they're on the subway, they're just reading. But then journalism also gets complicated because people are nowadays exposed to all kinds of information. So they have to, when you write the news, you have to write it in such a way that it goes beyond the breaking news. But feature writing, storytelling, it's in our DNA. You know, it's like we want to know what happened next, you know? And there have been people who have studied the art of writing, you know, and they say, essentially, you have to have a conflict and resolution set up, because there's a conflict and there has to be a resolution. If it's missing, you have a conflict and there's no resolution, it's not a good story. You study the actual and feature writing and news writing. They're different. I've practiced both of them, and doing profiles of people. It's a beautiful profession, and sometimes I'll just randomly run into a stories that I have written, you know, and then I'm taken back to these times and places, being in Monrovia and or Mogadishu or in Luanda, Angola or Mozambique. It's like my life is littered by, and it's all now on the internet, which is amazing because these things literally live forever in this time and day. Journalism is a beautiful profession that's under siege these days, but there's not been a better time for people who want to learn, because my goodness, it's all there. Mm-hmm. From YouTube videos to documentaries to everything you can imagine, is human knowledge is there. Unfortunately, we are also at a time when we are stopping to read books, and that is really dangerous because our attention is sucked in by smartphones that we pay attention to 100 times a day. And so people are beginning to wake up to that. One of the best things in life is boredom. Mm-hmm. You need to give yourself a chance to be bored, you know, just to sit there and think or take a walk, and then all kinds of things happen. But right now, there's not a split second at the grocery shop line where people whip out their phone and start. We need to just be bored, mm-hmm. and then we will pick up a book or something.
But it's true what you say, just in terms of like reading. We're lucky here at Dave Recruit because we've got the bookstore. But just going back to your experience with writing and reading, and how that kind of all amalgamates into your craft, which just from the way that you talk about it, I can hear that writing is your first love. And I just wanted to know as well, because you spoke about documentaries, your involvement in documentaries. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know your thoughts on words versus images and how you kind of make that connection, mm-hmm. from a creative point of view and from, I suppose, a communication point of view.
Yes, writing is a different experience than filmmaking and visual storytelling. So our brain processes visual information differently than words. So one does not replace the other, but documentaries are one of the most powerful ways of telling stories. But the basic storytelling skill, writing, is the basis of documentaries as well. What people most often mistake is that they took writing into radio and radio into TV, you know. So talking heads that appear on video is one of the sort of really boring, deadly kind of way of telling stories using video. You can tell stories visually in a completely different way, because you by watching the screen, the viewer is already in seeing a lot more information than that you'd have to spend hundreds of words explaining, you know. So it's a very specific art to telling a story. You're telling visual stories by telling the picture, tell the story. And then you just, the words you use or the narration is very spare, very simple, that sort of lead the viewer to understand the story. As a print journalist, I was frustrated when I was on the field that I could only just write stories. I couldn't. So once I left Newsday, I kept searching and searching and searching until I found a company that was giving video journalism courses. It's called VJ. So it was in Cape Town, and I went to learn how to make videos. And then I invited the instructor to come to Joburg, and I worked with him as a co-facilitator of workshops in videography. And we did that, and eventually I bought the company from him. I had another career as a video instructor. I teach people how to make videos, and it's an amazingly powerful tool, because I can open people's eyes so quickly, and then once they learn it, then they have that knowledge forever. For example, the camera work is about a five angle shooting from five angles. Any scene has to be shot from five angles. Like if we're sitting here
and there's an over-the-shoulder shot of your face, my hands gesticulating, wide establishing shot, a creative shot from the top, looking down or from down here. And so those, if you have those are the puzzle pieces that make complete picture. So when you put those scenes together, the viewer immediately has an idea. So this works whether it's in a cooking show where you see the carrots being chopped by the chef's knife, or The Godfather, and you see the same techniques of shooting from five angles. It has to be done. Another piece of knowledge I'll drop here about videography is in a 1 minute video, there are up to between 30 to 50 different scenes, which is unbelievable, because people don't understand that in order for a video to be put together properly, you need to have that many different scenes. It's jam-packed with, like, if you're shooting in a restaurant, you know, you just can't just pan around and then and that's it. You need discrete scenes, you know, a cocktail being poured, a draft, the handle of a draft beer being pushed, a flame going on a skillet. Like, you have to collect 30 to 50 different scenes, because you're going to need all of them, because we absorb information visually so quickly. So you have to pack it all together, especially in this day and age where everything is fast moving. If somebody just, we have 7 seconds before somebody pushes a button to stop, to kill your video. So within those 7 seconds, you have to capture the attention of that person and just keep on hanging on to them until the end of the video. That changes the way videography is made. So when you make a video about a subject, you don't necessarily go linearly from A to Z. You go for, like, if P is the most interesting thing that happened, you know, there's some really like, what the hell kind of event that happened, you take that and you lead with that. And then, like, the viewer saying, you know, what is this? Like really capture, like, and then you explain that. And then you go to your second most engaging clip and put it there and then explain that. Before you know it, the viewer is like now engaged and following you. So that whole paradigm shift in your thinking of how to write words in print, in books or magazines, or newspapers, and how to tell stories visually is different. The different arts, documentaries, filmmaking, videography is different than print.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to visuals, I think so often, you know, you're describing how important it is to have that full scene set up and everything and all those different shots. But I suppose it also just shows you how easily that can be manipulated depending on the angle and what content people want to show.
I mean, journalism, in the old days, even currently, you don't see the full picture a lot, you know.
So it would be like if you were traveling through Europe or the West and people discover that you're from South Africa, and they would say, they would know just some very basic things about you, like Mandela and this and that. And they would say, a crime, you know, it's like, yes, there's crime, but like this country is a lot more complicated and nuanced than, so just don't categorize us in these narrow, you know. The same thing in Ethiopia. Ethiopia now has changed its reputation positively, but there was times when there were drought and war and famine, and people used to associate that country with those problems. Now they associate it with Ethiopian food, Ethiopian coffee, Ethiopian airlines, beautiful Ethiopian women, beautiful Ethiopian men. So news sometimes gets distorted because of all these different lenses. And then, of course, we are at a crisis point in time, especially in the U.S., because the way Donald Trump is broken all the norms. But it is, you don't even know how the future is going to look infinitely scary, because where we are going is a different subject than what we're discussing here. I'm sure people are now aware that essential reading to understand where we are in is Yuval Harari, who wrote Sapiens and Homo Deus,
and 21 questions for the 21st century. And he explains how we are basically getting ready to be hacked. In fact, we are hacked right now. And what that means is our brains are being hacked. But another important book that I recommend is a book called Future Crimes by Mark Goodman. Mark, M-A-R-C, Goodman. It's the one book that I was used to be a techno-optimist that, you know, I love science fiction, and I thought we were going to be, you know, everything was going to be like Star Trek or, you know. But when I read his book, I realized that it's a very, very, it could be a dystopian reality that we can end up in if we do not watch out.
Again, it's like visuals and tools and technology that are being used for, like you want to say, you use your powers for good, not evil. But it's, mm-hmm. it seems like us as humans, we seem to find a way to manipulate everything, which is so unfortunate.
Yeah, because we're so bogged down, you know, with all the stuff that's happening with the right wing and left wing. What's happening, say, you know, with the revival of right wing populism is that the last gasp, dying gasp of Western supremacy. People are like waking up and saying somehow, how did we think this was okay? And so we're trying to find a middle ground where we address sort of the tragedies of the past, reconcile them with the present, and move on. And that's particularly relevant in South Africa, in the US, and Australia, all these places where people, there's an original sin of displacing people, enslaving people, all those things that is just not acceptable. But right now, there's a battle going on between these two forces.
One of the things that distinguishes humans from every other animal is also our ability to tell stories and to live through mm-hmm. stories.
Yes.
And the way that we tell stories, mm-hmm. which is exactly that, like history is told through stories, and mm-hmm. we've got to be very careful how we tell them.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's the power you have as well as a journalist.
Yeah. No, it's remarkable when you think about it. Say, in lately, we've been hearing a lot about Black Lives Matter, BLM, and things like that, right? And then a lot of issues that regarding the American South came out. And you realize that the South, although they lost the Civil War, were able to cast the whole story in such a light that they came out heroes. I mean, there are American military bases named for Civil War generals. There are major highways and thoroughfares and schools. And these people basically went to defend slavery and treasonous toward the United States. And in the history books, they were treated like, you know, these upright people defending the traditions, whatever. And then all of a sudden now, like, people are saying, no, these are not people. In some cases, even, you know, questioning leaders of the countries that were slaveholders, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a situation where the story, the narration is being changed, you know? And so that is happening, you know? People are reevaluating how everything was framed, exactly,
mm-hmm.
you know? And the way situations were framed in the world is so different now, because you Hollywood created certain images, you know, and people grew up with you know, cowboys and Indians. I mean, think about the cowboy and Indian thing. That's literally, the cowboys are the heroes, and they are going around shooting up Indians.
Mm.
And we rooted for the cowboys. We wore the cowboy hat. We had guns when we were boys, and things like that. But that's not really what happened in history. So it's complicated, but we're questioning everything, because people accept the reality in which they're born in. And we can still have a moral compass, but it's not as clear cut.
Mm.
As
if you had a billboard for everyone to read, what would you want it to say, like, in terms of now this kind of message?
There was this quote by Steve Jobs. basically stay hungry, stay foolish. That really resonated with me because no matter how our age and our circumstances, you always have to strive for new things, creative things, and not worry about looking foolish, you know, because that basically describes me. I do all kinds of things. During COVID, I've been restoring furniture, gardening, going on hikes, all the things that I had no time for in the past. I mean, right now I would be like in some remote hiking spot and then my phone would go clink and it would say salsa at 6, Sunday at 2 p.m., 6 cocktail bar. And then I'd say, oh my God, I'm in the middle of the wilderness. My life has changed. And so I loved reclaiming my life back to like, I have more patience for everything. I'll just be scrubbing a pot to like make it shiny. And I never had that kind of patience before. So somehow that has been the positive thing in my life because there's nothing else to do. Like on a beautiful sunny Saturday, I'll just say, oh, it's too nice to stay up. Let me, you know, take my scooter, go to the neighborhood's market, you know, browse, eat something, and then go to 44 Stanley to stop by my friend Helen's boutique clothing store, or go to downtown Ethiopia, like Little Addis in downtown CBD, to have kitfo and like Ethiopian delicacies so that I can't get anywhere. So that was my routine. Some days during COVID, you were in the house for, you know, 4 hours on end. So you really started looking. And it took me back to my days of being a kid and reading and being satisfied.
So it's almost like a form of meditation itself, because you're kind of forced to pay full attention to those little things that you would do quickly before, because it was like something you quickly had to do before you rushed off somewhere else. So I agree with you. I think those little moments that you are paying more attention to makes you feel a lot more grateful for it. And like you say, there's this massive shift in what it is that you're paying attention to.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask, did you grow up in Ethiopia?
Yes. I grew up in Ethiopia. I went to school there, and then you know went to America. So, I'm one of those people. I just don't know what to say when people ask me where you're from, and I am from Ethiopia. I am American. I live in South Africa. So there's this lady. He says, "Don't ask where you're from. Ask where you're local." You know. So I'm local. In Joburg, I feel like I know so many people in Joburg, but I know a lot of people in Addis and a lot of people in New York. I keep saying I'm a global citizen because it would not be true to say I'm Ethiopian or I'm American, I'm South African. I'm just a mishmash of all these places that I've spent a lot of my life in. So it's a beautiful thing though. You know, it's just opportunity, that's what you should do. Go live in Hong Kong, you know, or Taiwan or Zurich, you know.
You've obviously very well traveled. You said you've been to
62 countries.
Is there any place in particular that you haven't been that's on your list?
Japan. I've been to China, Russia, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, the big places, but I have not made it to Japan, and so that's really top on my list.
That's very cool. But I mean, also you've got your community in Little Addis, for example, which is in Johannesburg, South Africa, but it is very Ethiopian.
Yes.
What is your affiliation or your experience with Little Addis in Johannesburg?
I go there to eat, to get food, and sometimes I take friends to show them. It's like stepping into a market in Addis. It's a very unusual experience. It's because a building would be full of Ethiopian businesses, and every floor would have a hairdresser, a barber, a restaurant, a music shop, store, and it's just a remarkable scene. to step into Addis Ababa in downtown Johannesburg. I did a study for the Open Society of South Africa some years ago about the Ethiopian community in Johannesburg, and at that point there were 80,000 Ethiopians. I'm sure it's like much more than that now. And so they live in this in the city, and they also have connections to what are called locations where in the rural areas. So they have Ethiopians. I'm an Ethiopian who went to America and then came here. But a lot of the Ethiopians here are immigrants who came directly from Ethiopia to here. And they're enterprising. See, Ethiopia, what makes it unique is the fact that it was never colonized by Europeans for its thousands of years of history, except for 4 years where Italy and Mussolini invaded Ethiopia. And he was kicked out. You know, he invaded, I think, in 1936, and he was deposed in 1941. And so so Ethiopia doesn't suffer sort of this mental anguish that a lot of colonized countries and people suffer. So Ethiopians, by and large, have a very intact state of mind. So they really do well wherever they go as immigrants. Like Ethiopians, there's so few Europeans in Ethiopia, and the language Amharic is spoken universally. English is like outside of the cosmopolitan capitals is not a non-existent. So they speak. It's like being in Japan or something. Like very similarities, a very unique tradition. The food is different than anywhere else in the world. Ethiopian food is absolutely unique and absolutely delicious and loved around the world. Mm. Obviously, it's reputed to be the birthplace of coffee in the province of Kaffa. And so that I love coffee, so very proud of that distinction. And one of the biggest misconceptions about Ethiopia that outsiders have is that it's a very hot, deserty kind of place. It's far from the truth. Addis is like very much like Joburg weather. It's high altitude. And so it does, it's a big country. I think it's twice the size of France. So there are very foresty areas in the south, and they're the hottest place on earth, the Danakil Depression near the Red Sea, is also in Ethiopia. So there are hot and cold places. It's a very big, diversified environment. So, it's really its biggest asset is its history, and it's one of the up and coming countries in the world. It does have some challenges because it has so many different ethnic groups, and they are trying to share power equitably, but that's not hard. But Ethiopia has a very young, charismatic prime minister, Abiy Ahmed. He just came out of nowhere to take the world by storm. He's like in his 40s, handsome, half Muslim, half Christian, and he started like making peace with all the neighbors. There was this absolutely horrendous fight with Eritrea, which used to be part of Ethiopia and then broke off. So there was this, he brokered peace with Eritrea, which won him the Nobel Peace Prize. So he won the Nobel Peace Prize. So he's this dynamic young leader. And if you go to Addis now, it has skyscrapers. It's like really transformed into this incredibly fascinating country. Yeah. So it is the second largest country in Africa. It was a population of 100 million, behind Nigeria and then Egypt. The biggest issue going on in Ethiopia right now is Ethiopia built a dam to generate electricity. One of the biggest dam projects in the world. It cost $4.5 billion, and it was it, put a dam on the Nile, and Egypt then raised alarm that the flow of the Nile is going to be affected. And so there's a tense negotiation going on between Ethiopia, Sudan, and Egypt regarding this dam. But it's pretty much almost finished.
Hmm.
And it's going to, they're not going to have load shedding in Ethiopia.
Yeah, at least. Hey, that's something we should maybe look into. But now, are you still working as a journalist?
On a freelance basis. Right now, okay. I'm preoccupied with developing this building in Jeffreystown. What used to be a furniture factory. It's a three-story building. And it's being converted into loft apartments, coffee shop on the ground floor, and an eventing space on the top. That is that's like the, because of me, you know, because Rooftop Salsa, the brand is me. That's sort of the home of Rooftop Salsa, but now you guys have asked me to do it at Arts on Main. So, but I claim that wherever I am is Rooftop Salsa. I can do Rooftop Salsa in Melville or Sandton. It's the Rooftop Salsa as a brand that I created, and it's hard to say what you bring to the table, but the mix of salsa, the different styles of music that are salsa, bachata, kizomba, and the like after like 10 years of doing it, like I do have sort of a sense of what gets the dance floor full and what are irresistible songs, whatever. So people recognize that and they do follow me. I left the canteen and started doing my salsa at Six Cocktail Bar, I had people, you know, all the regular dancers, like one by one, start coming over to Six until I recreated at Six what I had at the canteen. And the canteen went bankrupt, the Maboneng area went through all kinds of difficulties. And then COVID happened. So now everything is being reinvented. Arts on Main is a beautiful space. And what's the most remarkable thing that has happened is that right literally across the street from Arts on Main is opening, actually on Heritage Day, being inaugurated, a 1,200 unit apartment unit building at the former Jewel City space is opening. So there's going to be security, there's going to be underground parking, there's like supermarkets, pharmacies like Clicks and Office, and there's a fountain, there's a garden. They're furiously working to officially open the 24th of September. And it's a consortium of big players in South Africa. I think the main company is called Diversity, Nedbank, Atterbury Construction. All these guys came together to create these awesome apartment buildings for young professional types. And so that corner where Origin Coffee used to be at Arts on Main is the connecting point between Maboneng and this Jewel City. So there's amazing opportunity and hope that that connection is going to blossom into a beautiful working relationship. And I'm happy to be part of that.
Yes, it's definitely something to look forward to. I mean, Maboneng meaning place of light as well. And I think, like you say, that word reignite is important, because I think that's definitely something that we're looking forward to about that space as a creative hub, you know.
Mm.
And then I also wanted to ask you if with your Rooftop Salsa, do you work with a team or do you work quite independently?
Yeah, I do work with a team. I have a whole bunch of people that help me. I've learned to do many different hats, but since I can't do everything, you know, like I have people who help me teach line dancing, DJing. So I do have a support system of different people who help me because I've learned to be someone who knows how to do everything. And I do take photos, I take videos, I take, so I don't, like, it's interesting because sometimes people say, like, I am a DJ and I'm just going to be there, like, anchored to that space, well, like, the whole time, and that's all I do. No, I'm like, I play music and I run over, you know, I take videos, I take photos, I dance sometimes, and I lead I lead dances, but I also have people I've worked with for many years who help me with all these different things. So in this day, like, I was ahead of the whole gig economy concept, you know. It's like, it's not just, you just don't do one thing. You know, none of it is rocket science. One can learn to DJ, mm-hmm. one can learn to take photographs and videos and dance and so forth. So it is, you know, you can't just stack the skills, you know, a stack of skills allows you to do many things, you know. So I'm not intimidated by something new because I could just learn it. That's the future belongs to those people who, not someone who works for some sort of big company until they retire. Mm. It's like, it belongs to those people who can learn and adapt to the new situations.
Mm. You know? Absolutely. I actually think I recently read an article about that, how the future belongs to generalists, not specialists.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of power in being able to be as dynamic as you are with Rooftop Salsa, because, you know, then you've got a hand in all those facets, and that's what also makes you, in a way, the brand that people will follow. It doesn't, you know, regardless of the location.
Yeah.
So it's exciting to know that we are going to be having an event on the 24th, and we're looking forward to seeing where it goes and what the future holds next. If people want to find out more about Rooftop Salsa and about you and even your writing and videos and documentaries and stuff, is there somebody that, or somewhere that we can find that?
Yeah. Well, I have a website called rooftopsalsa.com. I have a presence in on Facebook for Rooftop Salsa. I also have a personal Facebook page. I'm active on Instagram. Yeah, if you type Samson Mulugeta, then my name pops up, and people can email me or WhatsApp me. It's a beautiful world. There's lots of stuff happening, and this time of year is always exciting. You know, it's like we are like absorbing the sunshine and feeling like, yeah, let's go out and play.
Yeah.
So that's where
the
we
sun's
are.
Out, the birds are chirping. Yeah. It's new energy. So let's hope it brings a lot of positive energy with it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I mean, it's really great to meet you and to have you a part of like our community as well. Just in terms of inspiration for the things that you do and hearing your input on a lot of different things, which I appreciate as well. So thank you for joining me and for coming here today.
It's been a total pleasure. Thank you.